This path will lead you to an unholy place, a cemetery.
Hi,
and welcome to
Beyond the Grave.
I'm Anna Swenson.
And I'm Haley White. This is our inaugural episode of our podcast, and we are so delighted to share our love for all things spooky, and maybe you might also find it interesting. In today's episode, we wanted to highlight a conversation we recently had with a funeral director, and also what it's like to work in that environment. So, Anna, when you think of a funeral director, what is the image that pops into your mind?
Usually I think of an older person, a man or a woman, kind of decrepit looking, white hair, might be a vampire.
I would say that's pretty accurate, honestly. However, this wasn't the case with Jake Halstead, who is a funeral director at Crown Hill Cemetery in Indianapolis. Jake is the opposite of what you would envision a stereotypical funeral director to be like. First off, he's younger in age, he has a warm personality, and an overwhelmingly great sense of humor. His passion for his career is inspiring, and in our conversation with him, it really, really showed. In this episode, we'll cover how he came into his profession, funny stories, the lifestyle of a funeral director, and his thoughts on cremains floating in outer space. Sup, Elon Musk.
Before we go on, we'd like to preface this podcast episode with a cautionary warning due to some intense details and sensitive topics in regards to death. We hope you stick around.
Enjoy! So, typically, what is your general lifestyle like?
This job isn't just, a 9-to-5 job. It's actually more of a lifestyle. So, that's one thing that I've found that for people coming into this career. They're like, oh, I work at a funeral home, 9-to-5, hang out with, it'd be cool, tell my friends I'm a mortician. Da, da, da. Well, actually, yeah, that's part of it. And you do get that title and, you can earn that. Some people think it's weird. Some people think it's respectful. But it's not just something you come to work and you go home and enjoy a normal life. I can't come here and meet a family and then go out drinking at the bars around here and make a fool of myself, because I might have just served one of those families that I'm out drinking with now. Or if I make a fool of myself, or I'm just being dumb in public, I have to keep in mind that I might be seeing this person tomorrow for their deceased loved one. We're on call 24 hours a day. Every day of the year, there's no such thing as a really true day off for anyone in the funeral business.
So what do those on-call hours look like?
So it's all situational. So obviously, you can't really control when, where, or how someone passes, at least not in the state of Indiana. So let's say it's 2 in the morning. I'll get a call on my cell phone from my answering service saying, hey, Jake, there's been a passing. And then can we text you the information? Of course. So then they'll send me everything they've gathered from whoever's called the death in. However, it is tough for a funeral director to go out and on removal at 2 a.m. and then to meet the family the next morning with, no sleep. Mm-hmm. So that's how a lot of the smaller funeral homes operate. But at Crown Hill, like I said, thankfully I don't have to do that. We have a transfer team, so I'm able to go ahead and, talk to the family over the phone at night, send out our transfer team to pick up the deceased and bring them into our care, and then I can continue to get my rest, come in the morning, and be fully rejuvenated to meet that family.
When you've gone out on a removal, what is it like?
It's different each time. Like I said, every case is different, and it's really kind of a humbling experience. First off, you're being let into someone's house that you've never met before, so these people are trusting you. They've never met me. All they know is that I work for the funeral home. You walk in and introduce yourself, and then you just kind of talk to them, and you don't want to jump right into, all right, where are they, let's go pick them up. At least that's not how I do it, or would recommend people to do it. But typically, you'd walk in, introduce yourself, find out who the next of kin is or who the person who made the phone call was, because sometimes the next of kin, like if it's a spouse, they might not be they might not even want to talk to you. They're just like, hey, call the funeral home and you guys handle it. And so it really just depends, like I said. But typically, it's a very quiet time, unless it was like an expected death, like the person had been sick for a while. Because sometimes we call those a blessing in disguise when someone's been terminally ill or something. And really, the passing is kind of a blessing for everybody, and because the person's no longer in pain or anything. And you can definitely tell the difference between those families when you first walk in, because they're more like, oh, hi, nice to meet you, da, da, da. But for the ones where it's kind of unexpected, or if they were just really, if they've been married for 60, 70 years, in those cases, it's more of just kind of like the person is just lost, and you're there to guide them while you can. And it's just really a humbling experience. You have to go into a different mindset too. If it's the one where it's unexpected, which is usually the case, you can't allow yourself to feel like the sadness that you're surrounded by, because they're looking at you for direction. They're looking at you, okay, what happens next? What do we do? And yeah, we're empathetic, but you don't want to be sympathetic. Because if you become sympathetic, well, then you're no better off. Not that's a bad thing, but you're just going to be as sad and as lost as, you know, as people you're serving. However, if you're empathetic, you understand what they're going through, and you're able to help coordinate and direct them. Then that's a whole new experience for the family. They're able to pick up on, that funeral director was as emotional as us. Like, but if you're there and help guide and direct them, that's more of a, oh, wow, you know, that director really helped us through that process and really made it a smooth transition for us.
So it's kind of odd to, like, be in this business. How did you get in?
So I actually started when I was in high school. My grandfather was making his pre-arrangements. He had pancreatic cancer. And the funeral director came out to the house. This was down in Mooresville, Indiana, on the southwest side. So anyway, I just happened to be helping him with his yard work, you know, being the nice little grandson that I was, and he paid me, so. But I came in to get some water and overheard some of the conversations they were having. And I was like, well, that's interesting, and I got curious. So I went and sat down and listened to what the funeral director and my grandfather were saying. And at the end of it, started asking questions, and the funeral director was like, well, Jake, do you have your driver's license? Yes, sir. Do you have a job this summer? No, sir. Why don't you come work for me? Okay, sir. So that was my really first ever job, even, was working for the funeral home. So he saw what I was doing with the landscaping. So that was my first job at the funeral home, was just doing the landscaping and the flowers and taking care of all the maintenance and everything. Then eventually he worked me indoors to where I was helping out on visitations and services, you know, being a greeter. From there, I started helping on what we call the removals or transfers. And then I started helping out in what's called the preparation room or the embalming room, getting experience there. Didn't embalm or anything, just kind of helped, again, with like dressing and stuff like that, mm-hmm. stuff that you don't have to have an embalmer's license for. And then after that, I just kind of took off with it. Started jumping around looking for different funeral homes. Got picked up by the biggest one in Indiana, actually. And they helped me get through school and did my internship with them, and eventually left there, and now I'm here.
When you're meeting people for the first time or hanging out with acquaintances, how do they react when they find out that you're a funeral director?
I get a lot of different responses. Usually if I'm out with friends or something and they're introducing me to their friends or I'm meeting new people, they never guess that I'm a funeral director. That's like the last thing they would guess. And a lot of that too is because the funeral industry is changing, and we're just now starting to see a lot of the younger people that are closer to my age come in and start, you know, being funeral directors. A lot of people, at least from my experience, when they think of a funeral director, they think of the old white-haired or gray-haired man or woman that kind of is a little creepy and weird, and they're like, well, we meet you, Jack, and you're like happy. So it's like yeah, you know, I'm a normal person, I'm just working at your home. So but yeah, it's changed. My family comments a lot on how much all our dinner conversations changed once I got in the business, because then you know, I come home with stories or this happened today, or oh my gosh, did you know this happens, or
So what are some of those dinner conversations?
This is when I was at Flanner. There was a younger child that passed away, and his family didn't want him to be alone in the funeral home overnight. So they did a traditional, what we call visitation and service. So since, again, the family didn't want the child to be alone, I had to stay the night. Well, not had to, but was given the opportunity to stay the night with at the funeral home with the child, stayed in the same room as him all night, and just brought up a couch and slept about 2 feet away from him. And then when the family came in the next morning, I was still asleep, and no one bothered waking me up, which I'm still mad about today. But I didn't fall asleep till midnight, just because those couches weren't the most comfortable. But the family appreciated so much that I stayed home and did that for them. They actually live around where I live now, and if I see them in the grocery store, they'll come up like, "Jake, how you doing?" And actually, the majority of the families, where if they see you outside of work, they'll usually come up and just like inquire, like, "Hey, how are you doing? It's nice to see you somewhere outside of the funeral home."
Additionally, do any of those dinner conversations that you have with your friends or family include ghosts? Do you believe in ghosts?
I don't really have an answer to that, because there's some stuff that at least personally I've experienced. But I'm trying to logically, like, okay, this happened because of this, this, and this. But I don't fully believe that was the case. There's been times when I've been at certain cemeteries, and then you can hear your name being called. And it's just kind of like a weird, I've only had that happen twice. And one of the cemeteries was down in Kentucky. But there was no one present that would have known my name, other than the family, and they were all gone. So it was just kind of like a weird situation. There was one instance where sometimes we'll listen to the radio while we're, dressing people or for doing a transfer. We'll have like soft music playing. And there was one instance when we were getting someone ready, and this wasn't here, this was at a different funeral home. And, Marilyn Manson, that artist came on. It was just the radio. But the person we were getting ready was like a hardcore Catholic. And this had never happened before, but all of a sudden the power to the radio shut off as soon as the Marilyn Manson started singing. And then the electricity started having issues in the room. And we literally like all kind of freaked out, like, whoa, what's going on? And we couldn't get the radio to work or anything after that. But then after we had the person fully dressed out of the room where they were supposed to be, then the next day, like, we had no issues with the radio. We never had any other issues with it ever again after that. So it was kind of just like, we all got this feeling like, wow, this person like really did not want that music played. Well,
how has working in this industry affected you?
But that's kind of what it did for me, at least, was this made everyone equals. So just at an early age, because when you're in high school, you have your cliques and all that kind of stuff. But especially again with me doing it as early as I did, I kind of became a loner, just because I would sit back and I'd see all these groups of people that would conform together, and you have your jocks over here, your skaters over here. And then I just at that early age, even, it opened my eyes to we're all just kids, like there's no difference. I don't know why you guys are even arguing about that. Like, it just kind of made a lot of material things just seem insignificant.
What makes this job worth it for you?
I love meeting people, but so that's one of the aspects is you meet hundreds, if not thousands, of people every year. The big thing for me is when you are finished with the services and you lay someone to rest, because you get people coming in doing like the funeral arrangements that are going through all different kinds of stages of grief. So if they're in the anger one, I've been called an asshole before. I've been called soulless, heartless. But that's just them again in the anger moment. And I've these same people that have called me these names. At the end of the process and after their loved one's been buried, they're giving you a hug afterwards, saying they're apologizing, or especially the men, they don't apologize, but they'll shake your hand and be like, you did good. But that's the big thing. The most rewarding thing is at the end, is where, because you'll, especially if they're like cussing you out during the arrangements, which you got to learn just to take with a grain of salt and not cuss them back out. But it's, they're going through a rough time, and you kind of got to put yourself in their shoes. Like I said, be empathetic and just remember what it was like for you when you lost your loved one, and then kind of, just go with it and like I said, majority of the time, most people give you a hug at the end and just really reaffirm why you're in this business, and it's to help these people through one of the worst times in their lives. So I like to make people smile and laugh. Arrangements kind of judge the room and see, because some families you can joke around with, and not like fully joke around, but just kind of make, you know, some snide comments, or if they start teasing you a little bit, you know, you can banter back and forth. And my icebreaker is, since my name is Jake, they always bring up the Jake from State Farm. And sometimes I do wear khakis, so that plays right along with that. And I can usually judge right off the get-go if someone brings, oh, Jake from State Farm, and if they look at my pants and they're like, oh, you're wearing khakis. So I can automatically tell, okay, this is a family I can be a little more loose with. I can probably build more of a little more relationship right off the bat and just make it kind of like a lighthearted arrangement. But then you have the ones that are like, okay, we want to get in, get this over with. And those ones you have to adjust and, again, meet their needs, because there's nothing wrong with them wanting to do that. It's just I naturally want to, you know, go ahead and make them laugh and smile. But for that person, the best thing for me to do would not do that. It's just to help them get through this as quickly as possible.
Has your grandfather passed?
Well, I was actually at Indiana State University studying grief psychology when he passed. So originally, when I graduated high school and I left that small town funeral home, I went over to Indiana State and I wanted to get my psychology degree so I could do funeral directing and offer grief counseling. However, I learned I could get my mortuary degree in half the time I could get my psychology degree. I was like, well, shoot, I'll just go ahead and get my mortuary degree. And then if I want to go back in school to finish out my psychology degree, I'll just use the funds I make from being a funeral director to do that. So while I was at ISU, actually, is when he passed. And that would have been my freshman year of college. So probably 7-8 years ago. It was rough. Well, personally, just because it was my grandfather and I was really close with him, and I felt horrible that I wasn't there, because I had just seen him the day before and I could have stayed because he died on a weekend, but I went back to go to a party at ISU and he told me to go back. And so it was just, for me personally, I was like, wow, like I could have been there when he passed, but instead I was being stupid. But so that for me made it real hard. And actually I still regret that to this day. But when I came back to help with the services, so they did use the funeral home where, you know, he did the pre-arrangements for. And they actually let me help coordinate the service and let me close the casket and let me do a lot of kind of the behind the scenes work, which was awesome, just to have that experience and know that, be able to see that from the very beginning to the end, just that my grandfather was well taken care of. I will say, though, during the visitation, I kind of just went numb everywhere, which most families and do anyway that were close. After I initially went numb, I went into work mode. Like, I didn't want to sit there and like, oh, Jake, we're so sorry for your loss. I was like, okay, so yeah, my grandfather's just around the corner here. Like, so I actually ended up being more of a greeter for that visitation and service, just because that just felt like the natural thing for me. And when I did sit down to like just to chill, like I started getting a little antsy, and that's when all the emotions started hitting me, and I was like, nope, got back up and started greeting again.
Did your background studying psychology in university help at all with the passing of your grandfather?
Well, that was another thing, was I could tell like what was happening and what I was going through, and instead of just dealing with it, I don't want to deal with this. I'm just going to internalize it and work. I did a great job of that until the end of the service. So when people started passing by the casket one last time, I lost it. Just bawled, like, right in public in front of this huge church, and people are coming by. And it was kind of embarrassing looking back, just because, like, I felt like I had been the strong one for my entire family that whole time, because they had been coming to me for a bunch of the questions and organizing and stuff. And then, you know, at the end is when it just became overwhelming and just kind of hit me like a tidal wave. Once we got out to the cemetery, I was back to normal Jake. But yeah, it was, I think it helped, at least the psychology and working in the funeral business, you get really good at internalizing things. So like, even in my personal life, something can really tick me off or really upset me, but you'll never know just because I'm so adept at not showing emotions or anything, because for these families, you can't. So like if a family says something that really offends me, which really nothing should offend any of us because we're funeral directors and we're exposed to everything. So if someone did say something that was very offensive, you just have to internalize that. You can't, you know, say anything to that person. They're going through a rough time and you don't know the story. You know how the people are like, oh, you don't know me. Well, literally, I don't know you guys. So if you were to say something and if it angered me, I'm not going to tell that to you because I'm helping you through, you know, one of the worst times in your life. And yeah, I might not agree with your opinion, but I'm not going to voice that. I'm going to say, okay, and then move on.
So what do you do to cool off after a long day of funeral directing?
Actually, I have walked the entire length of the cemetery. Took me about 2 hours. Just so I did like the outer part. And we do a lot of like 5Ks and stuff through here. So that's fun to do too. So there is a grave out there that has two broomsticks that are stuck into the ground either side. And I've been trying to figure out what the story is on that. But usually that's either for someone that's Wiccan or some kind of faith. There's interesting sights you can see from people putting memorial items on their graves.
So this is kind of a funny question, but have you seen any peculiar people around the cemetery?
Like someone you call the cops on? Well, during the race day, we did get some peculiar people out here that apparently thought the race and the parties were here in the cemetery. but again, everyone, you know, grieves and celebrates life differently. So these people, they were at the person's gravesite who they had lost their loved one for, and it was raining outside. I remember this because I was driving by and I was like, what the? They had a bunch of beer, like it was natural light they were drinking. They were taking their shirts off and dancing around this grave. And I was just like, okay, whatever. You see some interesting stuff out here. There are some crazies that come through, and that's just anywhere you work, really, you know.
What do you even do for those people?
Well, kind of entertain their questions and do anything you can for them. So I'm lucky in the sense, like I said, the funeral home and the cemetery are separate entities. So if they're asking me cemetery questions, which they usually are, I don't have the answers anyway. So I just kind of pawn them off to someone on the cemetery side. Oh, the information desk will help you. Goodbye.
So how do you think people cope, or even you cope, with being in this profession since it's so perhaps maybe emotionally taxing?
So, there's a lot of drinking with funeral directors. there's actually a lot of companies even too. That's the number, or one of the highest problems with funeral directors is alcoholism. However, personally, like I said, I like to do walks. I just bought my first house back in July. So that's where I get a lot of my emotions out, is just working around the house and doing landscaping.
Was this lifestyle, working as a funeral director and in the funeral business, hard to adjust to?
It was at first. You kind of get used to it after a minute, but it always changes too, because then if you get a heavy caseload, well, I might not get that day off. And then, okay, well, I'll take this day off instead. Well, then we're still busy, so then you just don't get your day off. So it's affected my personal life a lot when it comes to like making new friends and build like having a relationship, because you almost have to like be with someone that's in the business or is a nurse or something that understands the crazy like on-call hours and, hey, I can't make this happened, or, hey, I'm sorry, I can't make the Christmas party, this happened. If you don't have someone that's understanding like that, then it's like, well, there goes that.
Can you date somebody outside of the business?
It can't happen. In regards to, like you said, like the relationships, because a lot of people that have the 9-to-5 jobs, they just think, oh, you work for the funeral home. Most people aren't fully educated on the comings and goings and doings of the funeral home. So if you make plans to get with, like, let's say you're dating someone and they want you to meet their parents and come by this Saturday for lunch. Okay, I have a funeral. Oh, okay. Well, then the third or fourth time that's happened, you know, if they're not in the business or don't understand or aren't the kind of person that can adjust their lives to yours, like that relationship isn't going to work.
Another peculiar question I had was, what are some interesting ways cremains can be laid to rest?
In regards to that, we do have the capability to shoot cremated remains up into space now, too. I've had some families recently start inquiring about it, and they did just lower all the costs so that it's now more affordable for people in the Midwest, like shooting the cremated remains up into space, and then they fall back to Earth in a capsule. And there's another one where they're sent into orbit for 10 years and disintegrate, coming back into the atmosphere. There's another one where they'll shoot them to the moon. And then the final one where they're sent on their eternal voyage. Yeah, there's people brought in like Jack Daniels bottles, and then they wanted that to be the urn.
Were those past funeral directors?
No, these are just the people you find. Yeah, those are the ones you usually don't want to call the cops on if you see them out in the cemetery. No, I'm just kidding. But so really, anything can be considered an urn as long as it's a rigid container that seals. So, like I said, people brought in that. I actually had one family bring in a shoe, and then they brought the shoe box, and so that technically was considered an urn. That was a while ago, though, and that one was weird. Oh, I did have... So you asked about interesting cases. This is fresh memory. I had someone calling in asking if they were allowed to consume cremated remains because she wanted her spouse to be inside of her again. So that was... So there's... My response was, I don't know. I guess it's not technically considered cannibalism because it's no longer human flesh or even human DNA at that point. However, I wouldn't call around or keep telling people that's what you're doing.
What's something that surprised you about the outside world since you started working as a funeral director? Has your perception changed at all?
So it's death is the one thing that we're all guaranteed, but it's the one thing that we're also the least educated on.
What advice would you give to people who are thinking about getting into this profession?
If you think you want to be in the business, you should definitely shadow or research it first. Because, like example, I started my mortuary class with 32 plus students. We ended up finishing with close to 16 to 20. Of those 16 to 20, only 6 of us are still in the business. You either dedicate your all to it or nothing at all.
Hey, thanks for joining us on our inaugural podcast journey and also for hanging out with us today. We hope you learned something.
We'd like to extend a thank you to Jake and to Crown Hill Cemetery for taking time out to entertain our odd questions.
We hope to post more episodes in the coming future. And remember,
stay spooky!